Let's take a moment to debunk a widely held superstition about good usage. By the way, debunk, spelled D-E-B-U-N-K, means to expose as false, deceitful, or exaggerated, to prove that something is bunkum, foolish and insincere. Do you remember the old rule, don't end a sentence with a preposition? Well, it's too bad it was ever taught, for it is wrong, wrong, wrong. If you think I'm cracked, that I don't know what I'm talking about, then I dare you to say, you don't know about what you're talking. A while ago, while visiting relatives, I met a woman who was studying to be a teacher. She had just received a misguided lecture on the evils of ending a sentence with a preposition. How long are you staying for? She asked me. Then, embarrassed, she changed that perfectly natural sentence to, for how long are you staying? Which made her sound like Eliza Doolittle practicing for her next pinky-in-the-air tea party. For years, Miss Thistlebottom has been teaching her bright-eyed brats that no writer would end a sentence with a preposition, says Theodore Bernstein in The Careful Writer, a book that anyone who puts words on paper should keep close at hand. The truth, Bernstein asserts, is that no good writer would follow Miss Thistlebottom's rule, although he might occasionally examine it to see if there was any merit in it. Bernstein was assistant managing editor of the New York Times, an associate professor in Columbia University's School of Journalism, and a respected arbiter on English usage. Bernstein maintains that sentences that end with prepositions are, and I quote, idiomatic and have been constructed that way from Shakespeare's We Are Such Stuff as Dreams Are Made On to today's Music to Read By. They are a natural manner of expression. Examine a handful. It's nothing to sneeze at. Something to guard against. You don't know what I've been through. He is a man who can be counted on. I'm not sure what the cake was made of. Surely there is nothing amiss with these idiomatic constructions. Woe to Miss Thistlebottom if she tries to correct them. She won't have a leg on which to stand. Back in 1926, the legendary English grammarian H.W. Fowler, in his classic guide, Modern English Usage, called the rule about prepositions a cherished superstition. According to Fowler, and I quote, those who lay down the universal principle that final prepositions are inelegant are unconsciously trying to deprive the English language of a valuable idiomatic resource, which has been used freely by all our greatest writers, except those whose instinct for English idiom has been overpowered by notions of correctness derived from Latin standards. The legitimacy of the prepositional ending in literary English must be uncompromisingly maintained, says Fowler. In respect of elegance or inelegance, every example must be judged not by any arbitrary rule, but on its own merits, according to the impression it makes on the feeling of educated English readers. End quote. Hundreds of great writers from Chaucer, Shakespeare, and Milton to Herman Melville, Mark Twain, Ernest Hemingway, and Toni Morrison all have written intelligible, graceful, idiomatic sentences that ended with a preposition. To say those writers were wrong is like saying everyone in baseball's Hall of Fame didn't know a thing about how to play the game. The best contemporary writers also do not hesitate to let a preposition end a sentence when it pleases the ear, and they avoid doing so when it does not. So, the next time some nitpicking Miss Thistlebottom says you mustn't end a sentence with a preposition, try this retort. You, dear sir or madam, may twist your syntax into knots if you like, but please refrain from telling the rest of us what to end our sentences with. And that, as the saying goes, is what it all boils down to. Let's move on now to the next 10 keywords in Level 2. Word 21, haggard, H-A-G-G-A-R-D. Worn out, tired, gaunt, drawn, emaciated. A person who is haggard has a wild-eyed and wasted look, as from exhaustion, illness, or grief. Haggard is another word whose meaning I remember through the power of association. When I read King Solomon's Mines by H. Rider Haggard, I imagined the author as being as worn out and wild-eyed as his characters were by the end of their harrowing adventure. But you don't need to go through a death-defying experience to look or feel haggard. Long hours at work, lack of sleep, or inadequate nutrition can easily make you haggard, worn out, tired, wasted, gaunt. Word 22. Wave. W-A-I-V-E. To relinquish voluntarily. Give up. Forgo. To relinquish implies giving up something one doesn't want to part with, either out of necessity or because one has been compelled or forced. To relinquish possession. To relinquish command. To waive implies a voluntary refusal to insist on one's right or claim to something. To waive one's right to a trial by jury. To waive one's claim on a title or property. Waive may also mean to postpone, defer, or dispense with, as to waive discussion, or to waive formalities and get on with business. Word 23. Carnal. C-A-R-N-A-L. Bodily. Pertaining to the flesh as opposed to the spirit. Sensual. Corporeal. Carnal is not used to mean bodily in a general or neutral sense. We do not say carnal functions or carnal aches and pains. Carnal refers to the basic physical appetites of the body, especially the sexual appetite. We speak of carnal desires, carnal lust, carnal knowledge. Word 24. Sanction. S-A-N-C-T-I-O-N. To approve, allow, permit, authorize, certify, ratify. To sanction, certify, and ratify all mean to approve. Ratify means to officially approve something done by a representative, to ratify a treaty. Certify means to officially approve compliance with requirements or standards. A certified public accountant. Sanction means to give authoritative approval. The company's board of directors sanctioned the merger. Many religions do not sanction unmarried sexual relations. The law sanctions free speech, but not antisocial behavior. Word 25. Ambiguous. A-M-B-I-G-U-O-U-S. Uncertain, unclear, doubtful, dubious, questionable, puzzling, having an obscure or indefinite meaning. By derivation, ambiguous means having two or more possible meanings, capable of being understood in more than one way. An ambiguous intention is uncertain, difficult to determine, and therefore questionable, dubious. An ambiguous statement is puzzling because it can be interpreted in more than one way. It is unclear and indefinite. More difficult synonyms of ambiguous include enigmatic, cryptic, and equivocal. Antonyms of ambiguous include distinct, apparent, evident, conspicuous, and manifest. Word 26. Spendthrift. S-P-E-N-D-T-H-R-I-F-T. Wasteful. Spending extravagantly or foolishly. Squandering one's resources. His spendthrift habits will put the company out of business. You may use spendthrift either as an adjective, meaning wasteful, spending extravagantly, or as a noun, to mean a wasteful person, someone who foolishly squanders money or resources. There isn't a thrifty bone in his body. He's a gambler and a spendthrift to the core. The words improvident, prodigal, profligate, and spendthrift all mean wasteful, spending thoughtlessly or squandering one's resources. Improvident means literally not provident, not providing for the future. The improvident person does not save money for retirement or for a rainy day. Prodigal is a close synonym of spendthrift and means spending money in a reckless or extravagant way, usually to support a lavish or luxurious lifestyle. In the Bible, the famous parable about the prodigal son tells of a young man who wasted his inheritance but was forgiven by his father. Profligate means extremely prodigal or spendthrift. It refers specifically to a person who spends money with reckless abandon and lives a life shamelessly devoted to pleasure. A profligate Hollywood movie star who squandered his fortune in exclusive nightclubs and casinos. Spendthrift means wasteful, spending extravagantly. The taxpayers want a more efficient and less spendthrift government. Word 27. Mollify. M-O-L-L-I-F-Y. To calm, soothe, pacify, appease, soften in feeling or tone, make less harsh or severe. Nothing mollified his anger. Mollify comes from the Latin mollis, soft, and facere, to make, and means literally to make soft. Also from the Latin mollis, soft, comes the word emollient, E-M-O-L-L-I-E-N-T. As an adjective, emollient means softening, soothing, mollifying. As a noun, it means a softening or soothing agent, such as a lotion or cream for the skin. The verb to mollify once meant literally to make soft or tender, as to mollify meat, tenderize it. That sense is now obsolete, and mollify today is used to mean to soften in feeling or tone, calm, soothe, make less harsh or severe. The union leaders decided to mollify their demands. A good manager should be adept at mollifying conflicts that can damage morale. The plaintiff's attorney said that only $1 million settlement would mollify the pain and suffering her client had suffered. Word 28. Unequivocal. UNEQUIVOCAL. Clear and direct. Definite. Straightforward. Certain. Having a single, obvious meaning. Capable of being interpreted in only one way. Unequivocal, clear and direct, and ambiguous, uncertain, unclear, are antonyms. Unequivocal combines the common prefix un, which means not, with the word equivocal, a synonym of ambiguous. Equivocal language can be interpreted in several ways. It is deliberately vague, evasive, or ambiguous. Unequivocal language is clear, straightforward, and direct. Reporters are so accustomed to equivocal answers from government officials that they are often surprised and suspicious when they get an unequivocal response. Now that you know the meaning of unequivocal, I'd like to caution you about how you pronounce it. I have heard many educated speakers add a syllable to the word and say unequivocable. And I have even seen the word misspelled in books and magazines to reflect the mispronunciation. No matter who you hear saying unequivocable, it's incorrect a beastly mispronunciation. Unequivocal ends with vocal, V-O-C-A-L, not vocable, V-O-C-A-B-L-E. Take care to pronounce the word in five syllables. Unequivocal. Word 29. Malleable. M-A-L-L-E-A-B-L-E. Capable of being shaped. Able to be molded or manipulated. Adaptable. Impressionable. Certain metals, such as gold and iron, are malleable. They can be molded or shaped. In a figurative sense, malleable can also apply to a person or abstract thing that can be molded or shaped. For example, a young person's mind may be malleable, impressionable, capable of being shaped. Or an idea may be malleable, adaptable, capable of being shaped to fit various purposes. Malleable and the challenging word tractable are close in meaning. Malleable comes from the Latin malleare, to hammer, and means literally capable of being hammered into a desired shape. Tractable comes from the Latin tractare, to handle, manage, haul or drag along. From the same source comes the familiar word tractor, the farm vehicle used to pull wagons, mowers, and other agricultural equipment. By derivation, that which is tractable can be pulled or hauled. Hence, a tractable person is manageable, easily handled. A malleable person or thing is easily hammered into shape, and therefore is adaptable, impressionable. Antonyms of malleable and tractable include inflexible, unyielding, stubborn, obstinate, and intransigent. Word 30. Verbose. V-E-R-B-O-S-E. Wordy. Having too many words. Long-winded. Full of verbiage. More difficult synonyms of verbose include garrulous, loquacious, voluble, and prolix. Verbose refers to speech or writing that uses more words than necessary to get the point across. The corresponding noun is verbosity, wordiness, long-windedness, an overabundance of words. If you've been listening to this program from the beginning, as I've recommended, by now you probably are well aware that the esteemed author and narrator of Verbal Advantage is sometimes prone to verbosity. But seriously, whenever you see the letters V-E-R-B in a word, you can safely assume that the meaning of the whole word has something to do with words. That's because most English words containing V-E-R-B come from the Latin verbum, word. By the way, verbum is spelled V-E-R-B-U-M, but in classical Latin, V is pronounced like W. From the Latin verbum, word, come the English words verbal, pertaining to or expressed in words, verbatim, expressed in precisely the same words, verbiage, an excess or overabundance of words, and verbose, wordy, long-winded, using more words than necessary to get the point across. Since I'm already waxing verbose about words from the Latin verbum, word, allow me to digress even further and proffer a few words of advice on the words verbal and verbiage. Are you familiar with the verb to proffer, spelled P-R-O-F-F-E-R? It means to put forward for acceptance, present as a gift, as to proffer one's services, or to proffer friendship. But back to the word verbiage, which is often mispronounced, verbiage, as if it had only two syllables. Carriage and marriage have two syllables, but verbiage and foliage have three. Try not to say verbiage and foliage, or even worse, foliage. You will hear many educated people mispronounce these words, but believe me when I say that careful speakers consider the three-syllable variants truly beastly mispronunciations. Take care to pronounce these words in three syllables: verbiage and foliage. Now for a word to the wise on the proper use of verbal. You will often hear or read such phrases as a verbal agreement or a verbal understanding. Have you ever stopped to ask yourself exactly what they mean? If you're like most people, you probably figured that a verbal agreement or a verbal understanding meant one that was arrived at through conversation, one that was spoken but not written down. And therein lies the problem. The word oral means spoken, not written. And the precise meaning of verbal is expressed in words, either orally or in writing. Too often, verbal, expressed in words, is used to mean oral, spoken. And the message that results from that confusion is usually ambiguous. For example, listen to this sentence, which I found recently in the business section of my local newspaper. Ensure all promises made verbally are included, in writing, in the contract. As written, the sentence means that we should make sure that all promises, both spoken and written, are included in the contract. The writer wants to say that we should put all spoken promises in writing. But to convey that meaning precisely, the sentence should have read like this: ensure all promises made orally are included in the contract. In the future, whenever you refer to promises, agreements, or understandings, remember that if they are expressed in speech, they are oral, and if they are expressed in words, whether spoken or written, they are verbal. Of course, if they are expressed in too many words, like most long-winded legal contracts, then they are verbose, full of verbiage.
Let's review the 10 key words you've just learned. This time, I'm going to give you two words, and you decide if they are synonyms or antonyms. Are you ready? Here we go. Energetic and haggard are antonyms. Haggard means worn out, tired, gaunt, emaciated. To waive and to relinquish are synonyms. Waive means to relinquish or give up voluntarily. Spiritual and carnal are antonyms. Carnal means pertaining to the flesh as opposed to the spirit, bodily, sensual, corporeal. To sanction and to prohibit are antonyms. Sanction means to approve, allow, permit, authorize. Doubtful and ambiguous are synonyms. Ambiguous means uncertain, unclear, doubtful, having an obscure or indefinite meaning. Miserly and spendthrift are antonyms. Miserly means hoarding money. The miserly person is a penny pincher, cheapskate, skinflint. Spendthrift means wasteful, spending extravagantly. A spendthrift is a person who thoughtlessly wastes money. To mollify and to irritate are antonyms. To mollify means to calm, soothe, pacify, appease. Unequivocal and ambiguous are antonyms. Ambiguous means uncertain, unclear, indefinite. Unequivocal means clear and direct, definite, straightforward, having a single obvious meaning, capable of being interpreted in only one way. Adaptable and malleable are synonyms. Malleable means adaptable, capable of being shaped or molded. Verbose and long-winded are synonyms. Verbose means wordy, long-winded. That concludes the review for this section. Did you remember to keep track of your answers and calculate your score?
Let's continue now with the verbal advantage vocabulary and discuss the next 10 keywords in level 2. Word 31. Transient. T-R-A-N-S-I-E-N-T. Temporary. Passing away with time. Lasting only a short while. Momentary. Fleeting. Short-lived. Are you wondering why I said short-lived instead of the frequently heard short-lived? Here's why. In the words short-lived and long-lived, the second half of the word, L-I-V-E-D, does not come from the verb to live, as many people think, but is formed from the noun life plus the suffix ed. Hence the pronunciations short-lived and long-lived, which are used by careful speakers and preferred by most dictionaries. Since we're discussing pronunciation, I should point out that you will often hear educated speakers pronounce our keyword, transient, in various other ways, perhaps most commonly as transient, especially when the word is used as a noun to mean a homeless person, vagrant, or vagabond. Despite the popularity of the three-syllable variants, I recommend transient with two syllables, because it is the traditional American pronunciation and the one listed first in nearly all modern American dictionaries. Remember, transient sounds like ancient. Challenging synonyms of the adjective transient include transitory, evanescent, ephemeral, fugitive, and fugacious. All of these words mean lasting only a short while, but let's examine the fine distinctions in their meanings. Transitory applies to something that by its nature is bound to pass away or come to an end. All life must by nature end, therefore life is transitory. When Andy Warhol said that everyone is famous for 15 minutes, he was describing the transitory nature of fame. Here one moment and gone the next. The word evanescent applies to that which fades away like vapor or vanishes as if into thin air. The evanescent beauty of springtime flowers. A shooting star creates an evanescent trail of light. An intense experience, no matter how brief and evanescent, can become a lifelong memory. The word ephemeral, by derivation, means literally living or lasting only for a day. Newspaper writing used to be called ephemeral literature because the articles had a lifespan of only one day, with one day's reportage ostensibly erased by the next day's edition. From this original sense of lasting only a day, ephemeral has evolved to mean short-lived, existing for a short while. If, when you meet people, you have trouble remembering their names 10 minutes later, you could say that you have an ephemeral memory for names. The words fugitive and fugacious come from the Latin fugere, to flee, run or fly away, the source also of the Latin expression tempus fugit, time flies. By derivation, fugitive and fugacious mean fleeting, disposed to fly away or disappear. A fugitive, from the same Latin fugere, to flee, is a person who eludes pursuit, who flees from captivity or danger. The adjectives fugitive and fugacious both refer to things that are elusive, that are hard to catch or perceive because they happen or pass by so quickly. A fugitive smile. The fugitive colors of the sunset. Our fugacious memories of childhood. We may pursue happiness, but it is fugacious. Our keyword, transient, applies to anything that lasts temporarily or that is in the process of passing on. A transient guest stays for a while and moves on. A transient event is fleeting, momentary. A transient condition lasts for a short time. Antonyms of transient include permanent, timeless, eternal, and everlasting.
To continue with Level 2, Word 32, please fast forward the tape and go to Side 7.